How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 41 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Another crossover episode today. Going to have David Rommel from Locked On Heat joining me later to talk a few minutes about Dion Waiters and what kind of a season he stands to have this year. But first, sitting right here, well, right there on Skype, behind the computer, in Portland, Locked On Blazers host Eric Gunderson. How's Portland?
It's good. We thought that summer had left for good last week, but now it seems to be back a little bit. Not unlike what we thought about the Blazers last year. We thought that they were going to be gone from the playoff picture, and then suddenly they were back in it.
So some quick housekeeping before we get going. Locked On Thunder and Locked On Blazers are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder or Locked On Blazers or Locked On whatever team you're looking for to subscribe to the podcast. We've got NFL ones too. You can leave a review if you're feeling like it. Also, five stars is always nice.
Find us only yeah. Five stars.
Yeah, only five stars. If you want to give one, like, you can just send me hate mail instead. I prefer that. It's more personal anyway if you send the hate mail. And you can go and find us on audioboom.com too. You can go to normantranscript.com to follow my Thunder coverage too. And you know, there's a lot to discuss there. And today's joint venture between Locked On Thunder and Locked On Blazers is brought to you by SeatGeek. You can use SeatGeek to find the best deals on tickets. And remember, I'm on every day of the week now, off weekends, but shows Monday through Friday. It's the same with you, right?
Pretty much. I think it's kind of a sliding schedule. I will be doing 5 days a week, but some days we may publish on Saturday. Like this week, we're planning to publish on Saturday because we published our first podcast on Tuesday this week.
Ooh, you guys are – leave it to the Portland podcast to go hipster with Locked On.
Right, exactly. Like very, very, you know, leisurely, you clean, bus your own table type thing. You know,
yeah. Tuesday to Saturday week. Screw this Saturday Sunday weekend. We're going with the Sunday Monday weekend.
That's right. The alternative weekend. Yeah. The alt weekend.
Alt weekend dibs on a band name. FYI.
Okay.
Alt weekend has a great sound.
Did you ever see that video? Sorry to be on a tangent, but where they ask these people at Bonnaroo, or not Bonnaroo, like Coachella, like, are you ready to see these bands? And they're not even real bands.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So alt weekend is coming to the stage near you.
Alt weekend is, they got great stuff. You want to talk about basketball?
Yeah.
All right.
That's why I'm here.
You know about basketball, right?
Yeah,
I'd
say so.
I just want to make sure you know about basketball. The Blazers made some signings this offseason. Evan Turner, Festus Ezeli, re-signed some guys. What's the local reception like? Because I know one of the things that I think is interesting, and I think one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast during crossover week is that the Blazers and the Thunder, while they're projected to be in similar spots in the Western Conference standings, they also have a very similar local feel with the fan bases. And we're talking about two of the smaller markets, certainly in the bottom half, when you rank market size, certainly in the bottom half of the league. There's no question about that. And they've got similar fan bases, super passionate, always turning up. They're going to be insanely loyal. And I'm wondering what the local reception is for this team, because they outperformed expectations last year in winning 44 games and winning a playoff series against an injured Clippers team and getting the 5 seed in the first round. And, McCollum had a really good year, and it's one of the more exciting backcourts in the league, and they made some big signings and brought in Ezeli on good value and signed Evan Turner to a really big contract. And what do fans expect from the team this year in Portland?
I think fans are expecting a good team. I think they are expecting a more consistent team. I think they're expecting a playoff team once again. And I think they, you know, expect them to be in the mix, you know, to potentially get out of the first round, get home court advantage, you know, in the first round. And I think fans are expecting them to be a really solid team this year. I know they kind of surprised people. I don't think people are like, hey, you know, they're going to compete with the Warriors and the Spurs and those teams. I don't think that most fans think that that's what's going to happen. But I do think that there is an excitement about the team, and I do think there's an expectation that this team will be good, you know, be in, you know, get up into the high, you know, high 40s, low 50s range and potentially get home court in the first round. I think that's a real expectation just because of how far they went last year so unexpectedly. And I think also the way that they did it, the way that they kind of proved what people thought about them at the beginning of the season to be wrong, the way that they, you know, bounced back so well from losing LaMarcus Aldridge, Nick Batum, Wesley Matthews, Robin Lopez, you know, all extremely good players and proven NBA players. And the fact that they were a young kind of upstart team, I think just really has people excited. And I think they expect them to stick around.
I think the offense is going to be really reliable. I think that's really the one thing that you could look at this team and say, that's the thing that you can rely on for sure. I mean, I think the defense is going to be shaky. They were 21st in defense last year. I think it's going to be shaky, but I think the offense is going to be really reliable. You know what else is really reliable?
What, Fred?
SeatGeek, super reliable. So let's say that you start to search for tickets for a Thunder game. Maybe the Blazers are coming to town, right? Everybody wants to see the Blazers. They're fun. You get to see Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum. Awesome backcourt. Really fun backcourt. You get to see Mason Plumlee make ridiculous big man passes because he's just become an insane passer these days. And man, Damon Russ is going to be fun. So you walk into Chesapeake and you're pumped to see two of the NBA's two best point guards go at it. And like the rest of us, you're wondering if you've actually got the best deal on your ticket. Well, SeatGeek can actually help prevent that feeling. SeatGeek is an easy, mobile-friendly experience. You just download the app, SeatGeek, and the ticket is right there. You walk to the gate with the barcode right on your phone. There's a rating on every ticket, 1 to 100, to tell you what kind of bang for your buck you get for your ticket. Plus, there's an easy way to save more money. Now, listen up, because this is the important part. You just go to the settings tab on the app, you click enter promo code, and you type my promo code, L-O Thunder, that's one word, L-O Thunder, L-O, like locked on, to get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. You want to know if there are any deals to Thunder games or Sooners games or, you know, OKC Dodgers games next season you're missing out on this fall or next year or whenever it is. You can sign up for price alerts for events. Those are going to let you know pricing. And more importantly, they'll point out those sneaky moments leading up to games when prices start to drop. And SeatGeek will make sure to let you know what's in your selected price range. There's no more wondering what if when you think you may have overpaid for a game. Use SeatGeek and that fear is gone. So, Thunder and Blazers, they have kind of, I think they're similar in terms of their overall quality. But they have these differing styles, and that I think the Thunder are probably going to be top half of the league in defense. Steven Adams and Robertson and Oladipo and a couple other solid defenders, I think, are going to pull them up, and I think Billy Donovan's a good defensive coach. And I think they're probably going to be in the bottom half, probably the top of the bottom half, but nonetheless, the bottom half of the league in offense. And the Blazers, I think, are going to go on the other end. They were 21st in defense last year. And they signed Evan Turner, and he's going to get minutes now. Is that going to cut into the Aminu minutes? And if that's the case, what's going to go on? What's going to go on with that defense? I mean, is that a defense that could fall into like the bottom seven in the league?
You know, I think that the Evan Turner thing, the addition of Turner, I think actually should help defensively, because I don't see him cutting into Aminu's minutes, because one of the developments of this offseason, other than signing Azili and Turner, of course, was the front office's, you know, admission and, you know, advertising of Al-Farouq Aminu is the starting power forward. We're going to have him at the four. We're going to play small ball all the time, and we're going to commit to that all the way. And so I don't really see Turner even though he is 6'7", has more size than some of their other wings, I don't see him cutting into Aminu's minutes at the four, and I think that's where he's most effective, and I think that he can guard bigger players as well, and I think he will be an excellent four, and I think Turner, by way of providing another ball handler, he may not share the court with McCollum and Lillard at the same time, but his use as a ball handler, I think, will be able to save a little energy for Damian Lillard. And I think, you know, if Damian Lillard can get a little bit more energy and his defense improves some, then I think that even brings up the Blazers a little bit, because I think, you know, they've had this system for a while now. And I think, you know, the younger guys are starting to run out of excuses for no longer being, you know, effective defenders. And I think Lillard, you know, I think with the help of having an added ball handler, we'll really get a little bit more energy, and I think we'll be improved defensively this season, and I think that could help lead to just an overall improvement, you know, provided that the pieces that were already there kind of stay where they are. Plumlee is the question for me. Can he protect the basket? Can their big man protect the basket? And I think that's the biggest question for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unless all of a sudden, like, Noah Vonleh comes out of nowhere and starts getting minutes, I mean, that's going to be the case. Although I'm still on the Noah Vonleh train.
Yeah.
I'm still, like, I feel like I'm one of the only ones there, but I'm like, I am still on the Noah Vonleh bandwagon.
You and me, man. You and me are, I believe in Noah Vonleh. I love his talent. Like, he kind of had a bummer of a summer league. Like, he didn't perform as well as he wanted to.
A bummer league for
a better wording. He didn't have a great summer league, and it turned out, you know, he has an injury. He had a procedure to remove, I think it was like a bone or something, in his quad. Sorry for the terrible description. I should be better than that, but it was a surgery that's keeping him out 3 to 4 weeks. That's what I do know. And, you know, he may have been dealing with that there. And I just think his talent, the length, the ball handling that he can do. I mean, I've said this before on the podcast on Locked On Blazers, and that's that I had someone in the Blazers organization tell me last year, like, you know, this guy has just as good a handles as any of the other guards other than, like, CJ McCollum, who, like, has amazing handles. But, like, Vonleh has, you know, guard-like handle at, you know, 6'10". He's big. He's wide. He has a pretty decent knack for rebounding. It's just, you know, he's not always tuned in. He doesn't really have that edge yet to kind of be like, okay, like, you know, just not taking it from anybody, you know? Like, I think that's one of the things. He doesn't really have that edge yet, and I think he also loses focus from time to time. And his jump shot, whether it's confidence or execution, is just not there yet either.
So let's – you want to play a game?
Okay.
I'm down to play a game. Let's play I wish we had like a sound graphic in which I could throw it up there, and, you know, like how, like, Fallon plays a game and you know, you have a who's better. Let's call it who's better, right? Let's have it. Let's throw up a sound graphic of some, like, old folksy person singing, who's better? That's it. That's our graphic.
Who's better?
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go similar players on these teams. Who would you rather have? CJ McCollum or Victor Oladipo?
CJ McCollum.
CJ McCollum. That was a quick answer.
I think CJ McCollum is really, really good.
I think CJ McCollum is a wonderful offensive player. And if we're just talking offense, I get that. I agree with you that I'd rather have CJ McCollum. I'm just surprised that your answer was that quick.
I think Oladipo really wows me sometimes with his athleticism. And he is a much better defender than CJ just because he is so athletic. But CJ McCollum isn't a bad defender. Like, he may be undersized, but I wouldn't consider him a bad defender. Let's just put it like this. I don't think CJ McCollum is who, when the Blazers have struggled most defensively, I don't think it's CJ McCollum who's holding them back.
That's fair. And defense from your shooting guard is not necessarily going to make or break you.
Right.
Like, I'd rather have down defense from, like, a wing whose role it is to guard big wings. Or I'd just say I'd rather have that than bad defense from a wing whose role it is to guard big wings. Or, obviously, you don't want bad defense in a center. And if you have a point guard who's always, you know, maybe dying on – he's always dying on ball screens or something like that, it might kill you more. So two-guard defense might be the least important, which is a perfectly – perfectly fair point. But, however, two-point versatility can be a real asset, that being said. I'll take McCollum too. Who'd you rather have? Enes Kanter, and this is a good one because Enes Kanter could have been a Trailblazer. He signed that offer sheet with the Trailblazers, and the Thunder ended up matching on it for $70 million. Would you rather have Enes Kanter or Mason Plumlee?
Oh, man, that's really hard. I am going to go with Plumlee because I just think he's frustrating in a lot of ways, in probably similar ways that I think Kanter can be frustrating, but I'm starting to believe a little bit more in like the value of being able to do lots of different things. And I think Plumlee does more different things. So I'm going to lean towards Plum Dog.
It's interesting because Kanter is incredible at like three things.
Right.
Plumlee is an amazing passer, I have to say. Plumlee is like one of the best passing big men in the league in my mind. He's a wonderful passer. I have an annoying answer for this. I think it's the answer is it depends on the team.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to go there, but I wasn't sure I was allowed to.
Yeah. Well, who cares? We don't even have a theme song. We can make up the rules as we go. Our theme like, song is me.
Just like the weekend. Just like the weekend. Just like
we
the
have alt, to get. We have to get Alt Weekend to do our theme song. So who's better? It'll be really good.
Absolutely.
And we'll have them perform it at Coachella.
I'm
Alt,
ready.
Alt Weekend would be the most likely band to bring. Like, do you think Alt Weekend would go to Coachella over Bonnaroo? Because I do.
Oh, yeah. I think, because people would be like, oh, like, Alt Weekend. Like, got to go check them out at the, you know, Palm Tree stage or whatever. I've never been to Coachella.
I can tell from your immediate hesitation and then just how like hard tongued you were on Palm Tree stage.
Right. It should have been more seamless or I would have pulled it off.
It's okay. I've never been to Coachella either. I live in Oklahoma. I don't know what music festivals we have here.
You gotta look that up, man.
I know. I got to find that. I know Bruce was here in April and I missed him, and that's the real disappointment.
Ah, man.
That's the really disappointing one.
Yeah. Okay. Does that make you a bad New Yorker?
Well, I've seen him six times.
Okay.
So,
all right. So you're
it's
fine.
Not like I've never seen him before, and this was my one opportunity. I've seen him six times. So, okay. So I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Okay. You're fine.
Yeah. I think I'm okay. All right, here's a variation of who's better.
Okay.
Better defender, Andre Roberson or Alfred Okamino?
This is a good one.
I'm good at these scenarios.
This is a good question. Man.
I love Aminu.
I think Aminu. I just think, like, I don't know. It's probably because I've watched Aminu guard more, like, elite offensive players. I know that Roberson does that. I know he has that task. But I've just seen Aminu do it more, and he's really, really good at it. And so, like, to me, it's a toss-up. Like, I really just think, like, I mean, I guess I just wouldn't say I haven't studied Roberson enough. But I do know that Aminu, you know, I guess it would just be, like, who do you think is – because I think Aminu is better, actually – he's more adept at guarding like big men and bigger wings like Gordon Hayward. And he can like really guard like Gordon Hayward and like LaMarcus Aldridge really well. But like, I think he's not quite as good against maybe like James Harden.
I completely agree with that assessment. I think I would take Roberson. No, I think Aminu is the better player. Because Aminu is you know, obviously the better offensive player, and he shot so much better last year than he ever has from three, and that's something that Roberson's still working on, obviously. And if he ever made threes, that would change his game a lot. But for now, Aminu is the better player because Aminu 3 years ago wasn't all that different from what Roberson is right now. Aminu's a little bigger, which I think does allow him to play the four more consistently than Roberson can. Although we've seen Roberson play the four, but you're not going to have Roberson guard, say, Aldridge. I would say, though, like, I think Roberson's gotten a lot better at guarding. And I think he's an excellent defensive player. I think he's gotten a lot better at guarding the big wings. And if you're going to have him play a position down, then I'd rather Aminu. But if you're going to have him play at their natural position and guard threes, like, Roberson did a fantastic job against Kawhi Leonard in the Western Conference semifinals last year. He was awesome. And when Kawhi tried to post him up, he was great, and he held his ground, and he got a handsy with him, and he was smart, and he plays within the offense. And I do think Roberson is a little better at, just because, honestly, it's really hard, because Aminu's a big wing. Like, he's a tall guy, and it's really hard for someone that big to chase guys around screens, because you're a bigger target. You're more likely to get screened up. And guys that big who have long strides, it's easier to screen those guys. It's easier to just lay a body on those guys. And I think Roberson's a little more slithery when he goes around chasing guys around screens. So if they're playing at their natural position, I actually would say I would take Roberson. But I think Aminu has become really, really great player on an unbelievable contract, which people thought was an overpay when he first signed it last year.
That was a great question, Fred. I just really wanted to congratulate you again. Like, that was a great question. Because those two guys are, like, very similar. And, yeah, that deal is insane. Like, especially, you know, when you look at the deals that they signed most of the rest of the guys to, I bet you, like, you know, Aminu's, I'm sure, happy with his money and not mad. But, like, I mean, maybe his agent's like, wow, like, I could have gotten Aminu a lot more money. Because, like, I mean, look at, you know, I mean, he couldn't have because he was just coming off a minimum deal. But it was like, I mean, it was a lot of money at the time, and it's like nothing now.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. And they also, the Blazers get those decreasing contracts too.
Yeah. They have that with him and with Ed Davis as well. They did a great job of that. And then this year they kind of just kind of ponying up the dough. But so, you know, with regards to the Thunder, I know, I think I agree. I think they're going to be like them, Utah, perhaps Minnesota and Portland. I think all could be around the same ballpark. And number,
I think you got more too. I think Houston could potentially be in there. And we're forgetting somebody. Oh, Memphis could potentially be in there, depending on if they stay healthy.
Right, exactly. So you got all those teams that are kind of in the same boat. So how does Oklahoma City? Is Westbrook's usage rate going to be like it was the year that he was playing without Durant for a lot of the year, but they were still losing? Like, is it going to be that kind of year? Like, what do you expect to see from him this upcoming season? I think they're more talented. Obviously, health was a big problem that year as well. But, you know, where do you see them kind of shifting their offense? Because I know Westbrook can take a lot of it, but he can't take all of it.
No, he can't take all of it. And I honestly don't think he will take all of it. I mean, people talk about it, and I've honestly written about and honestly kind of in some ways regret an article that I wrote at the beginning of July, shortly after Kevin Durant left, about kind of where Westbrook's usage rate numbers could be and how it's plausible that he could have the highest usage rate we've really ever seen since the merger. And during that season when, in 2014-15, when Kevin Durant got hurt and Ibaka got hurt, and he actually got hurt for part of it too, but that season, he had the second highest usage rate since the merger in the mid-70s, the NBA-ABA merger. He had the second highest usage rate ever behind Kobe in 05-06. And I figured, you know, he's doing this for a full year. Maybe he could do it. Maybe he could be the first guy to have a 40% usage. And I guess it's still like there's greater than a 0% chance that happens. But after really thinking about it and, you know, like really talking to people who are smarter than me about it and really starting to think about it in a more nuanced way than Russell Westbrook likes to shoot. Now he gets to shoot more and leaving my logic at that. I don't think it's going to happen. Like, I think he's going to shoot a lot, obviously. And I think he's going to shoot more than he did last year. Cause like he should shoot more than he did last year. He's a really good basketball player and he's going to have the ball in his hands more. So I think he's obviously going to shoot more and maybe he'll lead the league in usage. Like that's a total plausible scenario for me, but I just don't think it's going to go as far as it did a couple of years ago. I think he evolved as a player last year. I think part of that was Billy Donovan. A lot of it was obviously him because he's the one making the moves. I think he became a better facilitator. He was more intelligent in the pick and roll. He didn't take quite as many of those you know, bad contested long twos with time left on the shot clock. He really concentrated more on getting to the rim and shooting threes. And people knock the amount of threes that he's taking. And he probably shouldn't take as many threes as he does. But those threes, you know, they used to be long twos. And at least they're threes now, you know, like that. I'd rather those shots be threes than I would 22 footers. You know, I'd rather him take that extra step back or not take that additional step that he was taking out of pick and rolls and whatnot and take a 22 foot contested shot off the dribble. So I think he's been a better decision maker over the last year. And I just don't see that regressing. I don't think it was a fluke that he turned that way. I actually think it's going to go the opposite way. And I think he's going to shoot a ton. His usage rate's probably going to be in the mid-30s. I'm not saying otherwise. I just don't think we're going to see anything historic in the amount that he shoots. I don't think it's going to be like a peak Iverson year or a peak Kobe year or like a peak McGrady or that one year where Wade went nuts, I think it was 09, and just shot like crazy, or that Russ year from a couple of years ago. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think he's going to have a great year, and I think the counting numbers are going to be crazy, but I don't know if the assists are going to go up that much. Like, more than a quarter of his shots last year were assists to Kevin Durant. That's not as easy of an assist right now because they don't really have a wing who can shoot threes, and they don't have a wing who can create off the dribble, and they don't even have a wing who's a great cutter even inside the offense. I mean, Robertson's an okay cutter, but they don't have a wing who I'd say is, you know, that's a Rip Hamilton-level cutter, and they don't have a guy who's really running off screens and you know, running off pin downs or anything like that for threes or anything like that. So I don't think that his assists are really going to go up, and I don't see why the rebounds would go up. And obviously, he's going to score more. But, I think he's going to have a great year. I don't know if the numbers are going to be as, you know, video game like as people say once you really start to think about it.
All great points. And you mentioned the lack of a wing to get the ball to create something. And you know, how does this team create spacing? I know that, you know, Adams has improved as an offensive player and that Cantor and Westbrook kind of have a thing, you know, in the pick and roll. But, you know, I don't see places, maybe I'm not seeing them. And that's why I want to ask you. I'm not seeing places where they can kind of create some space for those kind of actions to really thrive.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to create spacing. That's going to be their biggest offensive issue this year. There's no question about that. I mean, I think we're going to see probably a lot more motion. Look, we're going to see a different schemed offense this year than we did in the past. Like, it's not going to be a my turn, your turn type of offense because your turn went to Golden State. So you know, Russell Westbrook's going to kind of have to facilitate in his own. He's going to have Oladipo there to help him. But when those guys penetrate the floor, it's going to be clogged. There's no question. I think Ilyasova is going to have to start just to remedy some of that because he shoots threes and guys guard him on the perimeter. So it'll open up the floor a little bit more for those guys. But I imagine they'll try Anthony Morrow because he's a tremendous shooter. And they'll hope that, you know, Alex Abrines can do something. And there's going to be more motion in the offense. They're going to implement a new kind of offense. And, you know, they're going to try Kyle Singler and hope he shoots his career percentage, I imagine, as well, because he's still a 37% three-point shooter, even after the really down year he had last year. So any way they can try to scavenge up some amount of shooting, I think that's just something they have to do. And, you know, I wonder if they're going to encourage Cantor to start shooting more threes, because I think he's physically able to do it. But the issue is, one of his best traits on the basketball court is that he's just such a great offensive rebounder. So if you put him at the three-point line, you're kind of losing that. So I don't know, but maybe you help your transition defense if you tell him to stop chasing offensive rebounds and you put him at the three-point line so he kind of gets a head start going back the other way. So I don't really know how they weigh those priorities, but spacing is it's definitely going to be an issue because they have a lot of guys who are below average three-point shooters at their positions, and it's something they're going to struggle with this year. It's really the main reason why I said earlier why I think they're going to be a bottom half of the league offense.
Right, totally. Yeah, you hit that note early, and it's going to be really interesting to see the, you know, what they come up with you know, once the season starts, you know, because then we'll see, you know, how they make that, you know, what their calculus is on making that decision. Are they going to have Cantor step out more, or do they just, or do they say, like, it's more valuable that he gets offensive rebounds and second chances for us than take out and shoot threes because of our spacing? And it's going to be really interesting to see how Billy Donovan answers that question, because I thought he did a, you know, I mean, you've talked about how good of an offensive coach you think he is. And, you know, he really did coach a great offense last year. And I think too, you know, he just showed in the playoffs a lot. I thought too, you know, he was very adaptive. So adaptable. And so I think, you know, he will adapt, you know, I'm interested to see how he's going to adapt with this, you know, really, you know, whole new team.
I know, me too. And I'm not quite sure exactly what he's going to do, but I do think there's going to be a lot more motion, a lot of different, you know, more creative types of screens. I think we're going to see more, you know, Steven Adams pick and roll. I think we're going to see Adams even get to create a little more out of the pick and roll on short rolls to the free throw line. And we're going to see a couple more post-ups with him. You know, I think they're going to try to get some more offense out of Enes Kanter and maybe get him 4 or 5 more minutes a night because of that. You know, there are a lot of different ways they're going to play it. And there's some redundancy on this roster. So I think he's going to go through his entire roster and trying to figure out his rotation this year. It's one of those teams where I wouldn't be surprised if come game number like 80, if come game number 80, 81, wherever we're at, you know, right at the end of the year, Billy Donovan is still playing around with a rotation that was different than the previous nights. So, I mean, none of that stuff would surprise me. It's a little different than the Blazers, who I think it's a little more intuitive what's going to happen with their roster, although there's obviously some room for interpretation with where Turner goes and how many minutes Crabbe gets and all that.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch for the Blazers, because I think you know what it's all going to look like. You just don't know who's going to be where. And so, like, you know, we know Aminu's going to be the starting power forward. We know that Lillard and McCollum are going to get as many shots as they need and create a lot for everybody else, and that Plumlee's going to operate from the high post and grab rebounds and lead the break. We all know that. It's just kind of like, who's going to be at that three spot? You know, is it going to be Turner? Is it going to be Crabbe? Even Mo Harkless? And so that's kind of, I'm really interested to see that. And then the other thing that's kind of added a little bit of, you know, a wrinkle to the Blazers right now too, is that like a lot of their big men are injured right now. Festus Ezeli's hurt. Noah Vonleh's hurt. Myers Leonard's still coming back from a shoulder injury. So that they had to sign Greg Steensma to come into camp the other day. And so just to get another body in there is what I think it is. And so, I think it's going to be really interesting how the rotation, you know, but it's small tweaks. Whereas I think, you know, you could see the whole 15-man roster potentially being used by the Thunder.
I love that they signed the Steamer. I love it. I love it. I love it when a veteran goes to summer league and actually gets rewarded for it. I love that. Like Rasul Butler is like a 32-year-old going to summer league a couple years ago. I got irrationally pumped for Rasul Butler, summer Indiana Pacer.
Nobody gave any love to Keith Bogans though when he went to summer league for the Blazers. Like, not this past summer, but the summer before that, he was there with the Blazers. He barely played at all. He was just there. And it was just like, wow, Keith Bogans, like, still out here. And then that was when he also, like, threw a bunch of shade onto the 76ers for how they treated him. Like, they didn't call him. It was just like, they just, like, he found out, like, later that he was released. It was crazy. But, yeah, the veterans at Summer League.
You know, that's actually his given name. That's the name on his birth certificate. He just goes by Keith. It's short for, wow, Keith Bogans.
Wow, it's a surprise. It's Keith Bogans.
Yeah, it's actually, well, the Blazers actually have my favorite summer leaguer ever on their training. They invited him to training camp. They invited Tim Quarterman to training camp. My favorite summer leaguer. Just because he sounds like he'd be a dentist based out of the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Tim Quarterman, I don't know this, but I do have I think that he might have a chance, you know, to maybe make the team. I don't know if I would just say that Montero's place on the roster, I think, is a bit it's the most precarious one of the 15 guys that were on that stayed. They cut Cliff Alexander, but I think Connaughton's spot is pretty safe. but it is relatively safe. But I just think that, you know, Montero maybe is the one that's like a little iffy. So that, I think there might be a 15th, you know, I think there could be a 15th roster spot battle in camp. And I think Quarterman, you know, might get a shot.
Good. And if Quarterman doesn't make it, he can always go back to his dentistry practice working on I imagine he's a pediatric dentist working on the Upper East Side. And he does a good job. He's got some awards and he speaks at conferences. He's that accomplished. It's very exciting for him. So he's got a nice second career to fall back on.
You know, those kids, they can't stay away from the candy. It's cavities all day. You know, that's just money in the bank for Tim Quarterman.
Well, the kids love, he'd love going to his office because he's got a Pac-Man machine in his office. And they love just playing on the Pac-Man machines. It's great. They've got one of those old hockey machines too, where you play it almost like it's like a foosball table. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like ones that like clearly it's from the 80s, but like the impressive part of it is that it's still actually working and that like a piece of gum hasn't gotten clogged in there. You know why a piece of gum hasn't gotten clogged in there?
Why?
Because Dr. Quarterman does not allow you to chew gum at the dentist. That's why.
That was a great, great story. Love that.
Talk to Tim Quarterman about it. You can get the exclusive.
I will. I'm going to ask him about his dentist practice that he conducts in secret after when he flies cross country after practice.
He moonlights.
He moonlights.
That's all it is. Is this everything? Does this mean we've run out of things?
I think so. I don't think we have anything. I guess.
Before we go, I do have a question for you.
Yeah, I was about to say. I think we might have one thing.
Oh, yeah, one thing. So who wins more games?
That's what I was going for. I'm going to say Blazers are going to win more games.
Ah, interesting. I am. we've got the homer takes here. I'm going to say the Thunder win one more game.
Okay.
I when I come out with my preseason predictions, we'll have the Thunder at 45 and the Blazers at 44.
Okay. I feel like I mean maybe it's homer or what, but I consider myself a Blazers optimist. I think they're going to get home court in the first round. I just think that they're going to be a really solid team, but I'm excited to see how these two teams shake out, and I'm excited for all the games because they're going to be all really good, especially with how closely matched they are now that Durant is gone. It's, you know, it's going to be an even better matchup.
Yeah, it seems from our conversation I'm a little more down on the defense than you are. I just wonder kind of how they're going to do with Aminu, I think, really being their only plus defender. Because I agree with you, McCollum's not terrible, but he's not a plus defender, and Dame's not a plus defender, and you know, if Turner's going to have to guard wings more, I think that could hurt them. And Plumlee, while he's pretty quick and he's not bad in the pick and roll, he's not a rim protector, and he's not someone I don't think he's great when he guards as a four. I think he's better when he guards as a five, but he's also not a rim protector. And you know, if you're going to play Leonard or whoever else, it's going to be trouble. I guess if Azili's healthy, that helps a lot because Azili is a really good rim protector and a good defensive player, but he's already hurt, so that could end up being an issue, and that's part of why he didn't get a lot of money or as much money as, you know, similar players to him this summer too. So that's I think their defense is just going to be a trouble. I think they're going to be a really good offensive team. Like with that backcourt, you're going to be a really good offensive team. Like that's I haven't done it out in my head, but like that's got to be one of the five best backcourts in the NBA. And maybe I'm actually selling that short by saying one of the five best, right?
Perhaps. I think they're right up there in the top. You know, I think they're in the conversation with a lot of great backcourts. You know, with Toronto's, with the Clippers, with obviously the Warriors, of course. But you know, I think they're, you know, they're a top four at least. I would say I would take them over Toronto's. And so, you know, maybe I'd probably put them in my like top three along with, you know, after, you know, Steph and Clay, DeRozan, you know, not DeRozan and Lowry, but Paul and Redick. And then probably I would have Lillard and McCollum right there, right after those guys. Cause I think, you know, they're great. And I think on the defense, I think one guy that you forgot to mention defensively that I think has a really good chance to start is Mo Harkless. Like they had like a plus 14 net rating, and their defense was like, it was like the only starting lineup that they had with a defensive rating under 100. And I think they have 2 6'9" guys, and Harkless is quicker than Aminu. So I think he gives them a little bit of a dimension. So I, you know, Yeah, I do agree, though, that that's the biggest question mark. I guess it's going to be, again, a kind of a interesting look once the season starts, how they answer that.
True. And that's a good point. I like Harkless as a defender. And he's versatile, too. He can guard multiple positions. And you know, even in the playoffs, they had a lot of success with him as a small ball four there. So he's, Harkless is a good player, and that was a good re-sign for them. Do you want to talk about Locked On Blazers before we move along?
Absolutely. Subscribe to Locked On Blazers, part of the robust Locked On Podcast Network. We are on iTunes. We are on Audio Boom, of course, our hosts, and Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Google Play, everywhere you can get a podcast. Listen, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and follow me on Twitter at Eric_Gunderson. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Blazers, and you can even send us an email at LockedOnBlazers1word@gmail.com.
You should follow Eric. He does great work, and he's a fun follow. Quick break. Remember, we're not done. We got Dion Waiters stuff. Who doesn't want Dion Waiters stuff? So let's take a quick break, and then we're going to be welcoming in co-host of Locked On Heat, David Rommel.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Joining the show now, Locked On Heat co-host David Rommel. David, thanks for coming on, man.
Absolutely, Fred. Glad to be here.
So the Heat agreed to a 2-year deal with a former Thunder guard this summer, a guy named Dion Waiters. He'd have a bunch of guards now, Tyler Johnson, Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Beno Udrih, Wayne Ellington, and then there's Dion. Where do you think he fits into all of this? Because there's a little bit of a jumble in that guard rotation, and obviously he fits in somewhere, but where do you think that is?
That's an interesting question, and one made a little bit more interesting by the recent injury to Josh Richardson. It seems like he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, and we had projected him to be a starter because of his versatility on defense, the fact that he can space the floor better than anybody else in the starting lineup at this point. So we thought he was going to be the natural starter, but now that he's out, it seems likely that Waiters will probably fill that role. Although Tyler Johnson was just added to the roster with a pretty big extension, the 4-year, $50 million deal, I'm not sure that he's ready to assume a starting role at this point. He's a little undersized for the two position, and he's not quite the ball handler that, you know, Goran Dragic is. He's not going to supplant Dragic at any point. So I think that Waiters will likely start the season as the starting shooting guard.
Yeah, I think from a rotational standpoint, too, I don't know, you might disagree with me on this, but I'd rather have Tyler Johnson running my second unit than I would Dion Waiters running my second unit, and I think that works a little bit better if you bring Johnson off the bench, and you can certainly play him next to a point guard because he's pretty long, and there are lineups in which he can play the two. But you know, I think Waiters works a little better in a more conventional starting two role as opposed to having to come off the bench and maybe having to facilitate a little more offense for your team.
Yeah, I agree. I think he fits better with the projected starters. There's some good news here for Heat fans that Chris Bosh seems likely to rejoin the team. We haven't heard anything official from the Heat, obviously. They've been pretty mum about the subject ever since it was first diagnosed a second time. But at this point, it seems like he's likely to start. So I think Waiters fits along better there. And I think with that kind of veteran leadership in the starting lineup, he'll fit a little bit better.
Now let's talk a little about Josh Richardson, too, because Josh Richardson also has some Oklahoma City ties because he's from Edmond, which is a suburb just north of Oklahoma City. He actually went to the same high school as he went to Santa Fe High School, same high school as Epe Udo. So little bit of an Oklahoma connection with Josh Richardson too. And Richardson is probably going to miss the start of the season after that MCL injury. Now he's young. He was a rookie last year. He was so good in the second half. Like, it seemed like he couldn't miss a 3-point shot. He won Rookie of the Month at one point. I forget if that was April or March, but he won Rookie of the Month, and he was on fire really after the All Star break, just playing amazing basketball once the Heat really started to give him minutes. You have to imagine when he comes back, assuming he's healthy, he's going to get minutes, and I can't imagine that Waiters is in a point where he can steal minutes away from Richardson when Richardson does come back. But is there a scenario in which Waiters can get off to a good start, maybe if he is in the starting lineup, and maybe all of a sudden earn some of those starting minutes, some more minutes than maybe we think he's going to get if he's playing good basketball?
It's hard to see it at this point, to be honest with you, because I think, you know, Richardson has the edge in being, you know, familiar with the Heat system. He knows how to work with Coach Spoelstra. There's been a good mentoring relationship there between Richardson and Spoelstra. So I think that's really the connection that they were able to establish is kind of what allowed Richardson to blossom in that second half of the season, particularly with his three-point shooting. So it's hard to picture Wader supplanting Richardson. I mean, I guess I could see the possible scenario where they might think that he's clicking very well with that starting lineup and he provides some versatility on defense and that maybe Richardson provides that off the bench and he could work together with Tyler Johnson as a really strong and versatile backcourt. I don't project that, though. I don't think so. I don't think a lot of people do. I think, you know, Richardson has the length to play a number of positions. He's 6'6", so he can move around quite a bit. But they had several lineups last year where he's playing the point guard, although that was, you know, alongside Dwayne Wade, who's no longer with the team. So, I mean, I think Richardson's a better fit, so it's tough to think of Waiters. As much as I like him and what he can bring to the table, I just don't see him being able to take over a substantial amount of minutes. Because Richardson's, I mean, look, the reality is that the commitment that he made to Waiters was an unexpected one. You know, obviously he became an unrestricted free agent and he signed here, although he may or may not have had more lucrative deals elsewhere. And I guess there's some kind of a commitment from the Heat's organization, you know, from the Heat standpoint to try and help him kind of succeed here in Miami and maybe parlay his stint here into a more lucrative contract either here or elsewhere. But the reality is they want to continue to develop Richardson, and I think he's the future of this team moving forward. Unless there's a trade that I don't foresee happening in the next few months, it seems more likely that Richardson is going to be the future of the team.
Yeah, that's what's kind of interesting about this Heat backcourt, because it's not just those guys that I listed at the top of this segment. There's also a Justice Winslow who's not really a shooting guard, and he's so large. I mean, he's honestly closer to a center than he is to a shooting guard at this point because he's so big. Yeah. And like he played the five for a little bit in that Toronto series last year in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. And I mean, he's just gotten huge. Like he was massive at Summer League. And I mean, I see a scenario where he's basically playing more power forward than he is shooting guard. But you know, he is a wing in that sense. And you look at the amount, just the quantity of guys who play on the perimeter on this team. And there are a bunch of those types of guys. There's a lot of redundancy on this roster, I think. And they really did kind of fall into Waiters. Like, they didn't go into this offseason saying, all right, when Deion Waiters doesn't get the money people think he's going to get, we're going to scoop him up for the room exception, and that's what's going to happen. Like, that's not how this Miami team was thinking. They were moving forward. They matched on Tyler Johnson deal for, what was it, 4 for $50, right. which I think was probably more money than they thought they were going to have to pay for Tyler Johnson anyway when the Nets signed him to that offer sheet initially, and the Nets were just kind of signing guys to offer sheets, signing guards to offer sheets left and right, trying to see if they could get their hands on one of them. So, you know, Johnson ended up slipping away, and all of a sudden this team, you know, has a lot of guards there with Deion Waiters. I think it's a good scenario for him because I think it's a situation that allows him to build on what he did last year, which I think even if the numbers were a little down in the regular season, even if the percentages, he shot, you know, a hair below 40% from the field and the efficiency was not great, he was taking more efficient types of shots, and that really blossomed in the postseason when he had a really nice run, I think, in the Thunder's run to the Western Conference Finals, and he played good defense, and I thought his team defense got a lot better. He rotates better. He pays more attention. He plays harder. Yeah, he's always been a solid on-ball defender, but I think he got better at that just because his defensive smarts. Smarts is the wrong word. His defensive recognition has gotten better, and his shot selection has gotten better. I mean, you look at the percentage of his shots that come from mid-range, and that number is just so much lower than it was 2 years ago. I think it's like 16 or 15% of his shots from last year were from the mid-range area, and that was the lowest number in the league. And that was something that he and Billy Donovan made a conscious effort to work at throughout the year. And I think there are a lot of positives that he can take away from last year. Even if the playing time was a little lower, the percentages were a little lower, he didn't average double digits in scoring, but there are a lot of positives to take away. There's something to build on. And I think the Heat organization specifically is a good place for him to do that. Even if he gets 22 to 24 minutes, I mean, I think there is a scenario in which Deion Waiters actually does get the money that we thought he was going to get this offseason. He just gets it next offseason.
Yeah, there are some concerns on my end, though, because I think, and you could probably speak to this a lot more than I could, but I saw moments there where Deion was clearly being held in check by the larger personalities of Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. And although Bosch is, you know, set to return, I think he's not quite the vocal leader that either KD or Westbrook were. So I'm not sure if there's going to be that kind of system of checks and balances there to keep Deion somewhat constrained. And I'm not sure exactly whether or not he's going to try and – and do too much, maybe play a little bit more of the hero ball style that he was known for in Cleveland. That's a concern, I think, that he might be a little bit more reckless than what we had seen over last season in Oklahoma City. So if he wants to continue to build on that, and, you know, obviously there's a good culture in place. And like I said, Spoelstra has a real strong connection with players. He's been known to work diligently to try and get everybody on board and see the share the vision that he develops there. And there's obviously a good structure in place for the team's front office and everything else. But there are some concerns that without Bosch, there wouldn't have been much of a vocal leadership role there. Not, you know, Goran Dragic isn't known for being that kind of a player. You know, Richardson and Winslow, they're still developing. They're just in their second year, you know, barely 20 years old at this point. And Hassan Whiteside, you know, he's not really a leadership, a leader type at this point in his career. He's just still growing as a player himself. So there were some concerns there, but I don't know. The thing with Waiters is, despite the knock that he's had for most of his career, what I've always recognized in him is a willingness to get better. And it gets lost in a lot of the narrative about him being, you know, a hothead or calling for the ball too much and being somewhat unreliable. But I think there's been a willingness to continue to improve and to work on his game. And I expect him to continue to develop from what we saw last year with the Thunder.
Well, the point that you just made is it brings up a point that I think is particularly interesting, which is kind of the appeal of this Heat organization for a player like Waiters. Because I feel like the Heat organization, and you talk about the players a lot, and I think a lot of this comes from Spoelstra, and obviously a ton of it comes from Pat Riley, which sure. is it's kind of a place for player rejuvenation, right? I mean, you right. look at Hassan Whiteside, and people think of Hassan Whiteside as a young, up-and-coming player. I mean, maybe he's an up-and-coming player, but he's not really that young. He's 27 now. Like, he just emerged at an age that's, you know, a little older than what people normally are at when they actually emerge, because he was bouncing around from place to place for 3 or 4 years. And the Heat were kind of the organization that you know, disciplined him and held him in check more. And he really didn't start to play at his peak, in my opinion, until Eric Spoelstra started bringing him off the bench last year, when he was really, really good. And I thought he was more locked in defensively and wasn't chasing quite as many blocks, and was a far better defensive player, in my opinion, when he started coming off the bench. And the Heat, I think, deserve a lot of credit for that, with the way that they handle him and the way they handle personalities. Now, so you can correct me if you think that I'm wrong on this, but I mean, for me, this... The culture of the Miami Heat organization, obviously it changes with Dwayne Wade now gone, and he was a major part of that culture. But to me, the culture starts with Pat Riley, and he's still there, and it goes down to Eric Spoelstra, and he's still there, and Chris Bosh is a big part of it too. And I do think, from a career rejuvenation standpoint, it helps with Dion Waiters, or at least someone like Dion Waiters. And I think with Waiters, there's no question that his reputation was a big reason why he didn't get the amount of money that people like expected him to get, and he only ended up getting... I mean, he signed a two-year deal. It's really a one-year deal with a player option on the second year. He'll end up being a free agent next year. It's really a one-year deal for $2.9 million. And people thought, and he thought, that he was going to get a lot more money than that. It didn't end up happening. And I think if we see it for a second year, and the league sees it for a second year, Miami is a good spot for him to try to make kind of a reputation overhaul. Whether it's deserved or not, it's a good spot to make a reputation overhaul, and I think that's part of the appeal for him going there.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Pat Riley has been known to do that throughout his career, even before he came to Miami. You know, he started off the career of players like John Starks and Anthony Mason while he was with the Knicks, and even when he came to Miami, he's always been known to kind of boost players. There was a string of years there where he was always bringing in a kind of cast-off veteran point guard who would really thrive here for one season and then parlay that into a bigger contract elsewhere. It was amazing. But even more recently, there were players like Chris Anderson and obviously, Hassan Whiteside is a success story. Tyler Johnson wasn't even drafted. They spend some time in the D League, and all of a sudden they're much more suited and acclimated for the rigors of the NBA. And I really think that Waiters will continue to thrive here. I'm not quite sure what it is that makes Miami such a great place or a place where reclamation projects like that continue to thrive. But whatever the chemistry is, whatever the issue is, it's always worked during the Pat Riley era. And I expect that to be the case with Waiters as well.
So two quick questions before we go. Let's go quick answer on these.
You got it.
Dion Waiters' minutes total this year.
I'd say 20 minutes a game.
Does Dion Waiters stay in the rotation consistently throughout the season?
Yes.
How many points per game is he going to get? Or let me say this. which tier scorer is he going to be on the team?
Oh, certainly in the lower level. I'd say maybe a topping off at 10 points per game at most.
If you had the disposable income to get a summer home, would you get it in South Beach or would you get it on Waiters Island?
Waiters Island, absolutely.
Always Waiters Island. That's the right answer. Anything to plug before we go? You want to tell people about Locked On Heat?
Yeah. You can always follow us at Locked On Heat. You can follow me personally at DRamil13. I write pretty much everywhere and always willing to talk with anybody about Dion Waiters and Waiters Island.
And David is co-host with Wes Goldberg as well. Got to plug Wes as well. They do a really good job. Listen to them. And before we head out, remember I'm on every weekday now, Monday through Friday. This week it's all crossover episodes like it was today with Locked On Heat and Locked On Blazers. And you understand the point of it now. It's going to be a fun week. We're finishing it off tomorrow. If you're subscribed to the show, you'll be all good on getting those shows. Head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder or Locked On Heat or Locked On Blazers or any of the other Locked On podcasts there. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. Remember, you can head on to SeatGeek and make sure you type in my promo code LOTHUNDER, all one word, LOTHUNDER, to get that $20 rebate on your first purchase. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.